ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 10, titled Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Text number 18. Mukhadastar nirbhinnam jihvadatro bajayate tado nana raso jatne jihvayayodhigamyate. Mukhataha, from the mouth. Talu, the palate. Nirbhannam, being generated. Jihva, the tongue. Tatra, thereupon. Ubajayate, becomes manifested. Tataha, thereupon. Nana rasaha, various tastes. Jatne, become manifested. Jihvaya, by the tongue. Yaha, which. Adhigamyate, become relished. From the mouth, the palate became manifested, and thereupon the tongue was also generated. After this, all the different tastes came into existence so that the tongue can relish them. The gradual process of evolution suggests the explanation of the controlling deities, Adhideva, because Varuna is the controlling deity for all relishable juices. Therefore, the mouth becomes the resting place for the tongue, which tastes all the different juices, of which the controlling deity is Varuna. This suggests, therefore, that Varuna was also generated along with the development of the tongue. The tongue and the palate, being instrumental, are adhi bhutam, or forms of matter. But the functioning deity, who is a living entity, is Adhidaiva. Whereas the person undergoing the function is Adhyatma. Thus the three categories are also explained. As to their birth, after the opening of the mouth of the Virat Purusha, the four principles mentioned in this verse serve to explain the three main principles, namely the Adhyatma, Adhidaiva, and Adhibhuta, as explained before. Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpade Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prashabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye. Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhyevacha Paditanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gora Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Bhutair Mahadbhir Yayima Puro Vibhu Nirmaya Sheshe Yadamusha Purusha Bhungte Gunan Shodasha Shodashatmaka Sorangrishishta Bhagavan Vacham Sime. Hare Krishna. So here, the manifestation of different material elements are presented from the Virat Purusha. Here we can see how here the tongue, the mouth, the palate, and through that one can relish different tastes. This is described. In the material world, we want to make separate arrangement for everything. So here is the description about the tongue, the palate, the taste. You know, we can see that about the eyes, that about the ears, how different bodily features, bodily limbs, in its subtle form is being manufactured from the Virat Purusha, from the universal form. In fact, when I was in the university, there was a whole team working on the bionic ears. So to get the ears sorted out. So somebody may have a bad karma for a kind of bad ears. It's not working. So they had the whole instruments how to have the ears getting replaced with a bionic one. So the ear, nothing is working, but still it can create an impression of hearing. Why? There is a microphone which can actually get the sound, then it is processed and it creates the right signals and which will be sent to the brain. So one can have an impression of hearing even without properly functioning ears. So it was working to some degree. Then they developed a team. It is still there. It is called Bionic Vision Australia. So that is, if one's eyes are not functioning, then there's a camera which replaces the eyes, and that can create an impression of vision by generating the similar signals as the retina would do, and that get transmitted to the appropriate portion of the brain and create an impression of vision. So we want to really interfere with the nature, and then we want to manipulate everything. And when we have manipulation of the material nature, which is not authorized according to the Vedic scriptures, there are reactions. When there is interaction of the matter, there is reaction. It is explained by Narada Muni to his instruction to Vyasadeva in the beginning itself. When the matter interacts, there are reactions. And one who does that is responsible for such activity. So here we are at the original process of creation of this tongue and the palate is explained. And then here there is a beautiful category are presented in terms of the Adhibhuta, Adhidaiva and Adhyatma, the three Purushas as explained. And this explanation given fall into these categories. So if you consider any limb of the body, there is a limb in itself is there, which is Adhibhuta, the material body. And there is Adhidaiva, who is the controlling deity of that particular limb. And Adhyatma, the person who is actually enlivening the body, who is giving life to the body, Atma. So the whole this explanation categorizes different constitutional truths into different categories. In other words, different tattvas are being categorized. One is jiva, one is jada. One is jiva, but with the empowerment, the shakti of the Lord. So there is beautiful categorization of this. And there are many examples given in here. So now the question asks, why such a category is presented here? So it is already mentioned in the beginning of the same canto that these three categories are mentioned so as to illuminate and to establish the fourth category, which is the Supreme Lord Himself, who is mentioned as Swashraya Ashraya, who doesn't have any shelter. He is the Ashraya of Himself. So Ashraya, Ashraya. He Himself is the shelter. That is the Supreme Lord. And all other categories are dependent on the Supreme Lord. And they are interdependent. So we can see all these three categories are interdependent. So that is presented and established. Now, if you see Srimad Bhagavatam, even in this same chapter itself, uses categorization. And there is a purpose for categorization. And this categorization is used to establish different elements of the subject and to establish what is the highest. So we can see in the beginning of this chapter that the first verse of 10th chapter, Atra sargascha visargascha sthanam poshanamuteha manyantreshanugatha nirodho muktirashreha. The 10 subject matters, which are actually categories, are presented. Why such 10 categories are presented? The next verse explains. Dashamasya hi vishuddhyartham namanamiha lakshanam varnayanti mahatmanaha shruter arthena chanjasa. There is a purpose for having these 10 categories described in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 10th chapter, first verse, because it is to isolate the transcendence of the samambonam, the 10th subject matter. And for that, these other 9 topics are described directly, arthena, by giving direct explanation in summary form, and also by indirect explanation by quoting Vedic version, that is Shrutena, cha anjasa, in the summary form. So all these subjects are described ultimately to establish what is the absolute, what is the highest. So it is the categorical presentation of the absolute without any ambiguity. So that's why there is the 10th subject is presented. So this is the whole purpose. So we can see in our whole philosophy, giving so many categorization to establish the highest. It is very interesting. Now, even in this regard, people don't accept this simple fact. Srila Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami uses these categories to establish that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I had this experience when I was in my native place. They asked me to speak on Bhagavatam, and I gave a lecture based on Bhagavatam. And many of them argued. Some of them asked the question, and after that, all my relatives, everyone said, no, the 10th subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam is the 12th canto. So they were saying, no, they were bringing their notes because they have studied. Look at my note, I have attended many lectures, many saptas. That the dashama, the 10th subject matter is the 12th canto. Such misconception. So I asked why. So they said, they said it is mentioned in the sequence from 3rd canto onwards, because 3rd canto is starting from creation. Then you number from 3rd canto onwards, then the 10th one is the 12th canto. I asked, then according to subject, how can you explain? Okay, this is the numbering, okay, fine. But how do you explain in terms of subject matter? How can you say the ashraya, the complete shelter, is the 12th canto? So I got a very shocking answer. The shocking answer was that in the 5th chapter of the 12th canto, Sukadeva Goswami explains the final instructions to Maharaj Parikshit. And this final instructions are in one level, it is actually Brahma Gyan. It is explaining impersonal Brahman. So, why is it so? Then I was shocked. Then I at that point of time, I didn't exactly know why it is explained, the Brahma Gyan, as the final instruction in the 12th canto. However, I didn't argue on that point. I said, look, you all accept Sridhar Swami. And Sridhar Swami himself says that the 10th subject matter is the 10th canto. And it is quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Dashame dashamam lakshyam ashrita ashraya vigraham Shri Krishnakhyam param dhama tat dhama namamitat. So he says, the 10th subject matter is the 10th canto. Then they didn't argue. They said, we will read. I said, they asked, where is it given? It is mentioned there also. It is in the beginning. That is the first verse of the 10th canto commentary of Sridhar Swami. So then they didn't argue at least. They said, we will study and we will get back to you. So this is the condition. So even the shelter, the ashraya in itself is not clear for many who are studying Srimad Bhagavatam. So Shankaracharya himself didn't write any commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. However, his followers, they write commentaries and they speculate upon Srimad Bhagavatam, twisting the right meaning. So this is the scenario even just with the Srimad Bhagavatam. So why the whole thing is there? Just to explain the 10th subject matter. In fact, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains why the Brahmagyan is presented as the final instruction. The reason is just to cover the real knowledge and to bewilder the gyanis. So then I understood, okay, why they got bewildered. Because this is the arrangement of Sukadeva Goswami himself, to bewilder the impersonalist. And it is very rightly done and it is very effective. I had the direct experience. They got completely bewildered. So this is one aspect, that is presenting Krishna and his pastimes as the Supreme Absolute. So there is different categories presented to establish the Absolute. Same thing we can see in Bhagavad Gita also, right? Why there are different yoga ladders? Many people ask, oh, if bhakti is the ultimate, why there are, you know, different yogas? Just present bhakti and present a couple of verses and finish. But different yoga processes are presented such that all the different categories are covered. And then establish bhakti as the highest. And Srila Prabhupada, in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the last verse and the verse before, explains that whatever you speak about yoga, whatever you call your yoga, whatever name you call yoga, all these yoga processes are fall into these four categories. Karma, Jnana, Ashtanga or Bhakti. It has to. There is nothing separate. In the same way, in the last verse of the ninth chapter of the same canto, this is the tenth chapter, Prabhupada explains that whatever intelligent question one can ask, all those questions are answered in these 10 subject matters. So it is comprehensive. And after presenting comprehensively all the subjects, here it is established the 10th canto is the shelter. In the same way, all the yoga system comprehensively presenting, then it is established that bhakti is the highest. So there is a reason for categorization. It's very important too. We can see this, the whole thing, even in the 15th chapter, Krishna explains, okay, there are two kinds of living entities. One is Kshara and one is Akshara. And then he says, there is Uttama Purusha also. That is, I am. They're different. One is the Kshara, which is fallen down to the material world, and Aksharas, which are eternal Nitya Siddha devotees of the Lord. And there is a third category, that is the Supreme Lord. So Krishna, Bhagavatam, everywhere, these categories are presented so that the highest philosophy is presented and it is established. Same principle applies in Uddhava Gita also. Uddhava Gita, the whole Jnana section is given. In fact, again, interesting, I was having a chat with one person. He knew I am from ISKCON and, you know, Hare Krishna. He was telling me that he looked into different philosophies, Bhagavatam, etc. And he was telling, do you study 11th canto? I don't think you people study very thoroughly 11th canto. I asked why. He said, you people focus on bhakti. So you may focus on 10th canto, but not on 11th canto. I asked him, what is the conclusion of the 11th canto? He said, look, all the different processes are okay. Ashtanga yoga is there. Jnana is there. Everything is presented. But ultimately, Krishna says, bhaktiya egeya grahya. You know, only by pure devotion service can I be understood. Then why do you say that in it's for Jnana, but it is to establish bhakti? He didn't speak after that. They don't accept, but they don't speak. Since they don't have any counter argument, they don't argue, but at the same time, they don't really take it. They don't accept. They move away. So what can we do? So that's why it is very important that one need to have the Sukriti, Agyada Sukriti. In fact, Srila Prabhupada writes in one of the purport in fourth canto that the modern theory of evolution talk about chances. Okay, everything is by chance. Prabhupada says, actually there is only one chance in our philosophy, and that chance is Agyada Sukriti. That is, in our whole philosophy, that one chance is there, that is Agyada Sukriti. If one gets that, okay, then there is chance. Otherwise there is no chance. So the philosophy of chance doesn't come into our philosophy unless and until it is Agyada Sukriti. So if one gets that Agyada Sukriti, then they can accept everything. Otherwise, it is difficult. It becomes just, you know, dry. So when you speak to people, we understand. So that's why preaching, it may not be always giving philosophy. There is prasadam, there is harinam, everything, so that at least let people get some Agyada Sukriti and eventually they can come to the platform of understanding Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, when we speak about this kind of categorization and different categories, even Mahaprabhu does the same thing. I was thinking about Mahaprabhu. in ecstasy when we talk about different categories and establishment, it looks very philosophical. It is indeed, it is quite philosophical. And we can see in academic circle, you know, different analyzing and categorizing and, you know, coming up with different analysis and arguments, etc. However, Mahaprabhu does the same thing in divine madness, in Divyonmada. He, you know, he is in complete ecstasy. Still he is establishing the absolute truth. So that is very interesting. One time, Mahaprabhu, he was in Prayag. He saw Bindu Madhav. So many thousands upon thousands of devotees, they assembled just to take a darshan of Mahaprabhu. And after that, Mahaprabhu was invited. It was near Prayag. And he was invited by Vallabha Bhatta, that is Vallabhacharya. He invited Mahaprabhu, "You please come home." So Mahaprabhu agreed. And just before that, Mahaprabhu introduced Rupa and Sri Vallabha to Vallabhacharya. So in that incident, it's a very interesting incident. Mahaprabhu himself told Vallabhacharya that they are untouchable. They are from a very lowly background. Don't touch them. And Rupa and Sri Vallabha, they also did the same thing. They said, "Don't touch us. You know, we are from a very low background." They actually ran away. So Vallabhacharya could see there is, you know, and at the same time Vallabhacharya could see one thing. He could see that they were chanting all the times. Always the holy names were coming from the mouth of Sri Vallabha and Rupa Goswami. So Vallabhacharya rightly quoted the verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Ahopada Shubhachogari, and understanding that even if a person chants a holy name, even if he's from a background of dog eater, still it has to be understood that he has already gone through all the study of Vedic literature and he has gone through all the austerities in previous life so that he is getting an opportunity to chant. So Vallabhacharya quoted this verse and he said, "No, it's no problem. They are great devotees." So with this, Mahaprabhu was very much pleased. So Mahaprabhu was actually testing Vallabhacharya. So Vallabhacharya passed the test. And then Vallabhacharya invited Mahaprabhu, "Please come home. I want to offer lunch." So Mahaprabhu agreed. And all of them, they actually boarded a boat and it was going through Yamuna. So Prayag is confluence of the river. So going through Yamuna, and when they were going through Yamuna, Mahaprabhu saw the waters of Yamuna. It is mentioned it was Shamala and Chikkana. Two words are used. Shamala means black in complexion. Chikkan means it is glossy. So seeing the, these two nature of Yamuna, Mahaprabhu went into ecstasy. And he just thought about Krishna. And he jumped into Yamuna. So Mahaprabhu jumped into Yamuna, and Vallabhacharya and other devotees, a few devotees, they became completely in anxiety and they pulled Mahaprabhu into the boat. But when they pulled him into the boat, they got him into the boat, but Mahaprabhu out of ecstasy started dancing. And the boat started shaking and it was almost, you know, going to sink. That point, somehow or other, Mahaprabhu came into external consciousness and he just sat down. Then he didn't act. He tried to control himself. Then they were completely in anxiety. Somehow or other, they crossed the Yamuna and they reached the place of Vallabhacharya. And there, Vallabhacharya nicely washed the feet of Mahaprabhu along with his both sons, Gopinath and Vitaleshara. Vallabhacharya put their feet into the feet of Mahaprabhu and everyone was in ecstasy. Then he offered a complete arati to Mahaprabhu. All the offering, flowers, chamara, everything, full offering. And he offered fresh kaupin and bahirvas, everything was given. So Mahaprabhu, he was taken care completely nicely. And at that point, it was about time of lunch. And then suddenly, one great devotee appeared. So he just came. He was Raghupati Upadhyay. So he came and seeing him, Upadhyay became completely ecstatic and he paid obeisances. And Mahaprabhu gave the first instruction, that is, Krishna Matrastu. You know, you be eternally Krishna conscious. And Raghupati became completely happy hearing this. And Mahaprabhu asked him, "Okay, you narrate pastimes of Krishna." And he started narrating pastimes of Krishna. So as pastimes are going on, Mahaprabhu will go more and more into ecstasy. And Raghupati Upadhyay said, "How can I explain about Krishna? You know, people go reading Mahabharata, people go reading different other Shrutis, people go reading so many other scriptures and they take shelter of different scriptures, But I don't care about any of this. I just care of Nanda Maharaj. Because in his courtyard, Krishna is just crawling. So I just worship Nanda Maharaj. So he recited this verse again. Mahaprabhu went into ecstasy. Then Mahaprabhu started questioning. So he asked questions to Raghupati Upadhyaya. He asked, what is the highest form of the Lord? So this is, Mahaprabhu is in ecstasy. He's asking, what is the highest form of Lord? Then Raghupati Upadhyaya said, Shyamam eva param rupam. He said, Shyama, the Shyamsundara is the highest form. Then Mahaprabhu asked, which is the highest abode of the Lord? Then Raghupati Upadhyaya said, Puri Madhupuri Vara. The highest place is Madhurapuri. Referring to Madhura and Vrindavan. Puri Madhupuri Vara. Then he asked, which age? Because Krishna has his Balya. He has his, Pauganda, Kaishora, Balya, Kaumara, Pauganda, Kaishora. So he has different age group. Which is the highest? So then Raghupati Upadhyaya said, Vaya Kaishorakam Dheyam. Vaya, of the age, Kaishorakam, Kishor, that is the Dheyam. That has to be meditated upon. Mentioning that is the highest. Then, finally he asked, what is the highest rasaha? What is the highest relationship with the Supreme Lord? Then he said, Adya Eva Parorasaha. He said, the conjugal relationship is the highest. Then Mahaprabhu started singing this verse again and again. And both of them embraced and both of them started dancing. So this is, again, see, even in this Divya Unmat, in the divine madness, Mahaprabhu is categorizing. But not just based on tattva, but based on rasa. So this is interesting. See, again, Mahaprabhu is establishing what is the highest. See, if you see the first one, he asked, what is the highest form? Because all the forms of the Lord are absolute. Categorically, all are the same because all are Vishnu Tattva. But rasa-wise, he is telling Shyam Eva Param Rupa. Then, abode, all the abode of the Lord, everything is spiritual. But he said Puri Madhupuri Vara. The highest, the best is Madhupuri, Vrindavan. Then it comes to the age, because the Lord's age, everything is absolute. But he says, Kaumaragam Dheyam. Then he says, okay, the highest rasa is the conjugal relationship. So this is categorization based on the rasa. So Mahaprabhu does that, and by this categorizing, he's in ecstasy. So here we can see this explanation is primarily based on tattva, correct? It is based on the constitutional truth. It is being categorized. Jiva, the dead matter, devatas, which are jiva but empowered, and the Supreme Lord. So the categories are based on tattva. However, Mahaprabhu in ecstasy is categorizing based on the rasa, and he is in ecstasy. In fact, Mahaprabhu did the same thing. Before going to Prayag, he was with Ramananda Roy. Then we know the philosophy. Mahaprabhu established right from the very beginning to the highest of bhakti. Then it is mentioned after this incident, what happened was Vallabhavata was completely in anxiety because the river is nearby. So he started thinking, if Mahaprabhu again jumps into waters, it will be difficult. He was in complete anxiety and he said, no one can invite him for lunch anymore in this place. We had to pack him and send back to Prayag. Because when he go back to Prayag, it will be okay. And he has to be stayed somewhere, river is not close by. So like that, immediately after the lunch, after some time, Mahaprabhu left that place and he went to Prayag. So this is, this is interesting. Then it is mentioned that Mahaprabhu had his conversation to Rupa Goswami in Dashashamedh Ghat in Prayag. So there, again, Mahaprabhu established what is the highest level of bhakti. And it is mentioned that he established those on the basis of conversation with Ramananda Roy, because he used Ramananda Roy as an instrument to establish the highest of the truths. And then the same conclusions were presented to Sri Rupa Goswami. So that is the basis of our teaching. That is the basis of our teaching. Because Rupa Goswami, he explains so wonderfully in terms of sadhana bhakti and further sadhana bhakti classified into two as the vaidhi and the raganuka. And it also come to the highest bhakti, the sadhya bhaktis, bhava and prema. So like that. So Rupa Goswami actually classifies everything and explains so that we know where we are and how we can actually make progress in our devotional service. Here, the explanation is given about the three categories, and the four principles mentioned are the four process of evolution as given. From the mouth, the palate became manifested, and from the tongue generated. After that, taste, so that the tongue can relish. So these things are actually the progressive generation, the progressive evolution. So the four principles mentioned in this verse to explain the three main principles, namely Adhyatma, Adideva, and Adibhuta. In Srimad Bhagavatam, in the fourth canto, in the first chapter, it also explains about different degrees of Brahman in the pastime of Atri and Anasuya, how they got three sons, Durvasa, Soma, and Dattatreya, because they wanted, Atri wanted a son who is as good as the Supreme Lord. And he meditated upon, whoever is the Supreme Lord, kindly appear in front of me. I know that Atri, whoever is the Supreme, come in front of me. So his meditation was not really unto Vishnu. So all the three lords appeared in front of Atri Muni, and they asked, who do you want? So he said, whoever is the supreme, give me a son. Then there is a verse explaining all three are qualitative manifestation of the supreme. And so all of them gave one son each. Brahma gave Soma, Vishnu gave Dattatreya, and Durvasa was born from Lord Shiva. So there Srila Prabhupada explains again a categorization. Prabhupada explains there are different degrees of Brahman. There are different gradations of Brahman. So if you see, even any manifestation, when it is mentioned that Sarvam Khalvidam Brahman, that is different gradations of Brahman. It can be in different categories, Prabhupada explains. It can be in different categories according to Tattva, but there are different gradations. So the same principle applies to the same verse also. Here again, a category is presented. This suggests, therefore, that the Varuna was also generated along with the development of the tongue. The tongue and the palate, being instrumental, are adibhutam. So here, this primarily is speaking about the taste. The taste is mentioned. So it is speaking about rasa on the material plane. However, the rasa exists in the spiritual plane also, and that is the driving principle. And that's why Mahaprabhu categorized, as we explained earlier, different aspects based on rasa, because that is the higher guiding, governing principle in the spiritual world. In fact, Sri Surabhi Damodar Goswami glorifies Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this way. He says, this is in fact when Surabhi Damodar Goswami left. He was Purushottam Acharya. He left Nadia, because when Mahaprabhu took sannyas, he became devastated completely. And he left. He also took sannyas. He wanted to take sannyas. He went to Varanasi. And there, formerly he didn't accept sannyas. He didn't accept the external cloth, nor did he accept a name. He didn't accept cloth. He didn't accept the name, and he didn't have danda also. So he just came. After that, he left and he started going to Jagannath Puri. Once he came to know that Mahaprabhu is in Jagannath Puri. So once he reached Jagannath Puri, he found out that Mahaprabhu is not yet there. Then Surabhi Damodar Goswami stays in seclusion, worshipping Radha and Krishna. And when he came to know that Mahaprabhu has arrived after his South Indian trip, Surabhi Damodar Goswami meets Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then he glorifies Lord Chaitanya, falling at his feet. Then he mentions a very important verse it is mentioned, that verse actually covers three important aspects of the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The first aspect is mentioned that is applicable for all of us, that one who is suffering in the material world, their sufferings are completely removed once one takes shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Second, one who is into speculative arguments and philosophy, for them, Mahaprabhu establishes bhakti as a supreme process without any doubt. And on third, even one who is already purified and one who is already on the platform of devotional service in a very pure state, even for them, he establishes what is the highest aspect of bhakti. Madhurya Maryadaya. So he establishes that is the highest. So Sri Swarup Damodar Goswami glorifies Lord Chaitanya. So here we can see that Mahaprabhu categorizes the whole philosophy into different subjects. So which is very important so that we know what is the highest. And that's why Swarup Damodar Goswami glorifies Lord Chaitanya for presenting the highest aspect of the philosophy. Now, today is an appearance or disappearance of Vakreshwar Pandit?
Yes, I think so. I was checking.
Yeah, disappearance day of Vakreshwar Pandit. So I thought I'll speak a few words. I don't know much about Vakreshwar Pandit, but I'll speak a few words about this great follower and devotee of Lord Chaitanya. So Vakreshwar Pandit is coming as the direct disciple of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he is known for his dance. It is mentioned that Mahaprabhu would sing and Vakreshwar Pandit would dance. And he could dance for 72 hours non-stop. Something which is, if you think about dancing, you know, 15-20 minutes we can manage. Maybe half an hour or maybe 1 hour. After that, it is complete exhaustion. So here, Vakreshwar Pandit, he could dance 72 hours. And Mahaprabhu personally sang for Vakreshwar Pandit. One day, Vakreshwar Pandit told Mahaprabhu that I need thousands of Gandharvas. They can sing for me and I want to dance continuously. So Mahaprabhu told, I have only one wing and that is you. If I had one more wing, I would fly. He said, I would fly. Two wings. One wing was Vakreshwar Pandit. So he said, I can just fly. So that was the ecstatic dance of Vakreshwar Pandit. And also Vakreshwar Pandit, he was the chief dancer. Even in Jagannath Puri, and there are different groups of devotees. One of the chief dancer was Vakreshwar Pandit. And Vakreshwar Pandit is also very important in terms of establishment of a process in our line. So there is, you know, we usually follow in the line of Rupa Goswami, that is our bhakti. However, Mahaprabhu instructed Vakreshwar Pandit on Siddha Pranali, the actual process of Siddha Pranali, giving the real form of one's actual identity in the spiritual world and meditating and practicing that. So there is Srila Prabhupada mentioned the Siddha Pranali of Prakata Sahajiyas in Nectar of Devotion, and he actually condemned that. However, there is a process given by Mahaprabhu himself to Vakreshwar Pandit. And then he taught to his disciple Gopal Guru Goswami and then to Dhyanchand Goswami. So there is actually the real process of the Siddha Pranali exists. Even though it is not taught by Rupa, Sanatan or Raghunath, but we don't follow in that line. So that is from Jagannath Puri. So there is that line is originally coming from Vakreshwar Pandit and it is given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that also exists. So that is another significance of Vakreshwar Pandit in the line, in the aspects of the process of devotional service. So I stop here and see, is there any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
What is Siddha Pranali?
how it is the process. In actuality, if one has to follow that, one has to be qualified. And the qualification is the guru should know the one's spiritual form in the spiritual world. And a disciple should be so qualified that he can accept that. So it is not, if somebody is materially contaminated, it is impossible to practice. So Srila Prabhupada condemned that. So there were devotees who asked Srila Prabhupada, what's my original form in the spiritual world? Prabhupada said, how does it matter? Does it matter whether you are a gopa or a gopi or a cow or a peacock? It doesn't matter. Now we have difficulty controlling the senses. And mind is going wild. And we have difficulty chanting 16 rounds with some focus. Then why do you want to know about the spiritual form? First get qualified. First desire. Deserve, then desire. So that is the process. So there is a process for which we are not qualified. So we have the sadhana bhakti given by Rupa Goswami, starting from hearing and chanting. Any further questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Question is in regards to the chronological order of how the sense is created. Because if you apply the same thing, the taste does not exist prior to the sense organs comes into existence.
What is mentioned here? Anyway, this is in a very subtle form. This is not being enacted in a living entity as such. So as Purport mentions, Varuna must also have been manifested in the process that is mentioned in this Purport. So this tongue and the taste are not attached to a particular living entity at this stage. No living entity at this point is tasting. It is the creation of the senses in a very subtle form, in the beginning of creation. Yeah.
One more question there. About the demigods or the controlling entities of the limb, are they the controlling entity of the limb or the associated
with the subtle? They directly control the subtle senses. Yeah. Subtle senses, they control the subtle senses. Yes, here it is. That is the section given here. This is the manifestation from Virat Purusha. Any final question? Thank you very much. Granthasya Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.